The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In-your-face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we'll be talking with one of the greatest basketball minds ever, former coach and Hall of Famer, my friend Larry Brown. But before we get started with Larry, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. We are well into the NBA season, and if I'm going to talk about basketball, I'm going to talk about it with one of the greatest coaches who ever lived, still the only coach to have won an NCAA championship and an NBA championship. I think if you add everything up, the old ABA and the NBA and college, Larry Brown, who is in the Hall of Fame, has won more games than anybody who has ever coached in the history of the planet. I've told this story before. We've had Larry on once before. We met back in the 70s when he was coaching David Thompson in the ABA, and I looked up about halfway up Madison Square Garden on a Saturday night, and it occurred to me that the best player in the place was sitting about 30 rows up. I went over. I wrote a column about it. Larry Brown and I met that night. We have been friends ever since through many professional stops for both of us. He joins me today. Hey, Coach.
How you doing, Michael?
Well, Coach, I'm gonna throw you a batting practice fastball to start because I know how much you have loved this young man since the first time you saw him play. How about what is happening with Kristaps Porzingis and the Knicks and this love affair between the Garden and this kid?
Well, I think they like to team, Michael. One, and you know, they see this ray of hope. You know, there's a lot of great young players in the league. You know, obviously the Greek Freak and is great in Milwaukee, and then you see Davis and Cousins. There's a lot of wonderful players, but this kid is so unique. And the thing that I like most about him now is they're putting him close to the basket once in a while.
Right.
And I always thought that with his skill set and the ability to shoot the ball, even from range, teach him to play inside first, you know, to get to the free throw line, to shoot over people, to command double teams. And I think they've done a wonderful job of, you know, expanding his game. And then the people around him, you know, I love the French kid. I know people question whether he shoots the ball well enough, but I've had Bruce Bowen and Rajah Bell that couldn't shoot 40 from the free throw line, and both of them led the NBA in three-point shooting before they retired. So you can learn to shoot the ball, but you can't learn to have quickness and feel and be able to guard. And if you can't guard point guards in the NBA, you have no chance of winning. And then it's nice to have a rim protector behind you like the Knicks obviously have.
Hey, Coach, how about, and I liked him from the first time I ever saw him play, and I remember telling our mutual friend, the great writer and screenwriter, Bill Goldman, who we know goes to every single Knicks game and sits under the basket still, I said, you're going to like this Cantor kid. Coach, he got 16 more rebounds last night against the Clippers.
Yeah, you know, I'm close to John. I was at Kentucky that year that he wasn't allowed to play.
Right.
And I watched him every day in practice. And I was a little concerned whether he could rebound out of his area and whether he could, you know, move his feet defensively enough. But I didn't know what kind of grit he had. But he tries to rebound every ball. He tries to run on every break. He's ideal for Porzingis because he gives you a physical presence. And so do they have, you know, coming off the bench with O'Quinn, they give a physical presence to play alongside of him. But his effort is so great on every ball. He plays every shot like a missed shot, which I think is so critical. And people don't block out in the NBA. And he's played way above my expectations.
And, Coach, you just hear and see from Nick fans the wanting of a good team again. I mean, you know, we've talked about this a lot. You got caught up in a bad time there, in a bad situation. These are the New York Knicks. They have won one playoff series in the last 17 years. The only real success until the kind of success they're having now was when our friend Mike Woodson coached them to 54 wins in the Atlantic Division title. But as much as they looked at Patrick as a savior when he first came along, Coach, I can't remember a kid that the Garden so vocally loves the way they love Porzingis.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I've been in a lot of neat places, but I don't think there's any more knowledgeable fans or any more fans that really love the game more than the Knick people. And they respect kids that play hard and play unselfishly and try to guard. You know, I was with Scott Perry in Detroit, and he's a really, really bright guy. He's really, really a hard-working guy, and he's really, really fair and honest. And I think having him on board is certainly going to help. But you're right. They adored Patrick because Patrick came to work every day.
Yep, yep.
And then, you know, the way Pat coached, I think they adored that team because they played so hard and so unselfishly. But Porzingis is just different. And I think he does something every game that, you know, when I used to coach Allen would do something in the game and all the coaches, we'd look at each other and and say, you know, we've never seen that before. And I get the same feeling when I watch Porzingis play. And he's learning, you know, he's learning now to be a little bit more aggressive and physical. The officials now are giving him more respect. You know, I watched the game when he played against, well, I watch every game, but I watched the game he played against Dwight Howard. He fell down more than Tonya Harding did, but he's getting more respect, and I think that's really helped.
We're talking to the great, and I mean great, Larry Brown, who's as good a basketball coach as I have ever known in my time loving basketball. And they seem to have assembled a nice mix of young and old. And we didn't see this early. Coach, you know how it is in New York. I remember it was maybe about a dozen games ago, and you probably, if you were reading the papers, you remember this. They were acting like Hornacek had to win a game at home against the Nets, or he might get fired.
No, I remember, you know, 0-5 in preseason, losing the first three games. But here's the deal. You know, when they hired Jeff, they didn't hire him to run the triangle. I mean, he never ran the triangle. But if you look at his background, anybody that played for Jerry Sloan and coached with Jerry Sloan is going to have a lot of knowledge. And it isn't going to be about the triangle. yeah. And that's not knocking Phil Jackson, but, you know, he's always played up and down. His Phoenix teams were up and down. I mean, that's the way he envisioned coaching the Knicks. And I think they've put that team together where they can play that quick pace. I don't think they'll ever be a great defensive team, but they can be a good one because they have the shot blocker behind and, a potential point guard that can really shut people down. But at the end of the day, because Porzingis and Cantor command double teams, it opens it up for other people. And then you see a guy like, you know, Jack come in the game, and yep, all he does is lead the team and distribute the ball. And Lee, you know, can really guard. He can make an open shot. The kid they got out of Houston that's playing in the D-League is going to be a player someday. Dodson. McDermott always could shoot the ball, was relentless in terms of working without the ball. He plays better without the ball, which is a good thing. So I think it's a cast that you can build around. It's young people. Hardaway, you know, he's a volume shooter, but he plays hard and plays with energy. So I like what they've done. And plus, there's so many bad teams in the NBA, Michael, that you can win at home. You shouldn't be involved in a long losing streak, because there's always going to be a game or two that you can get out of a bad slump. And as long as you got these young kids that, you know, have this will to play together and enjoy each other, you have some good, you know, evolving.
You know, Coach, and this is no knock against Carmelo. I know you like Carmelo. I've always been extremely complimentary about what he did in the only real success the Knicks have had in those 17 years. But it seems to me that this could not have happened this way with Porzingis, especially if Carmelo had still been around.
Well, I think the only way it would have happened if they played Porzingis at five,
yeah,
Carmelo at four. But, you know, I don't know, Michael. That's a hard thing for me, because I don't think he's ever played with a great point guard, you know, a passing point guard, other than Chauncey that one year. But I think somewhere along the line, if you're going to have a player like Carmelo at that stage in his career, you got to figure you got a chance to win. And I don't think with the pieces they had around him at the stage in his career, they really had a chance to win. So they decided, we're going to build a team around a point guard and a young big kid, and then fill in the blanks. And I think that's the best way to start. And they've done it right. They got the right coach. You know, I thought Derek Fisher did a great job. You know, you know how I felt about Woody, but I think with this young team, they got a pretty good situation going, and I just hope that they continue to grow and give the young kids a chance to play.
Coach, let's talk about another one of your old teams, a team you once coached to the NBA Finals, and that's the Sixers. Coach, there finally seems to be some hope there. And, I mean, if they can keep Embiid and Simmons on the court, those two kids are something to see. I know they got a little life lesson in the second half against the Warriors the other night after they jumped off to a big lead. But, my goodness, they're fun to watch.
Well, you know, you had 4 years where they're tanking, and everybody brags about the process. Well, what happened with the process with Noel and Okafor? They did the right thing. They got lucky with Embiid because he got hurt. Otherwise, he would have been the first pick. They absolutely took the best player with Simmons, and you don't hear people talking about the fact that Simmons doesn't shoot it great anymore because he does everything else. And then they've made some really good pickups. You know, it's a team that I think, you know, they get JJ, who takes pressure off both those kids. They get the center from the Celtics that's older and selfless. So they've got, you know, they got a similar situation to the Knicks if you think about it. Natima is not Simmons, but he's only 18. He's going to be pretty damn good. And you got Porzingis and Embiid. And then you just fill in. And I think both teams are doing it the right way. And then the nice thing about the Sixers, the fans stood by that team and never gave up on that team. And it's so unusual. They kept a coach that won 25% of his games for 4 years, and he still got the job, and they trusted him, and I think that's a good thing for our sport.
You know, Coach, I was thinking as you said that, yeah, the slogan might not turn out to be trust the process. It was just that they trusted the coach. All right, let's stay in the Atlantic Division. You know, we've talked about him before, what a ridiculous fanboy I am about Brad Stevens. They lose Hayward 5 minutes into the season. They lose their first two games. They came from behind. It's the day after we're having this conversation. Last night with Kyrie scores 47 against the Mavericks. Coach, 16 in a row, and they're playing the best defense in the sport for Brad Stevens.
Yeah, I think people forgot about how good Morris is.
Marcus Morris, yeah.
I don't think people realize how good Tatum is. They got my young kid, Simi. But the guy that aside from Kyrie and everybody else, the kid that's blown me away is Brown. You know, I saw him in high school, and
you're talking about Jaylen Brown from Cal, right, Coach?
Yeah, he was by far the best high school kid I saw that whole summer, following him around. And you look at it, they give up Crowder, they give up Bradley, two unbelievably really good players, and yet they're still in a position to be great. I know they added Morris and they added Kyrie, you know, and they added Tatum and Simi, but they're such a selfless team. And he is a great coach. He's a better guy than he is a coach.
I know he is, Coach.
And it's reflect, you know, his players reflect that. He doesn't get on their ass, but he's tough when he has to be. But they play the right way. They defend, they share the ball, they take great shots, and when it really matters, Horford and Kyrie take over. And they got a lot of complementary parts that are going to be great for a long time.
Coach, Bob Ryan goes to a lot of Celtics games still, and he was saying to me the other day, he'll go to games, and Marcus Smart will be out there for an extended period of time and won't score a point, and the Celtics will be plus 15 while he's out there.
Yeah, he's somebody. Well, he was, I think, one of the reasons they won last year, because they got guys like him and Bradley. They had guys like him and Bradley, you know, and Brown at the time. But you got to have those grunge guys that defend. He can defend multiple positions, and most of their guys can. And the way the NBA is being played, everybody's switching. So if you look out on the court, other than Baines, you got all mobile people that can guard multiple people. And when you come off the bench, you come off with defense and toughness. And in no way do they struggle offensively, because they always have enough people out on the court that can score. So they're the package. But what? Don't give up on Cleveland, Michael. People forget they still have LeBron, and they added an unbelievable amount of depth to their team this year. And I don't think that there are a lot of really great teams in the league. But I really believe when you have LeBron and then you've added, you know, depth like they did with Green and Dwayne Wade, you're gonna be a factor, you know, when the season's all said and done.
What, Coach, why do you think they've... I mean, I know a lot of teams struggle. The Cavaliers have struggled early in the season before. What do you think is the biggest contributing factor to them struggling the way they have so far this season?
Well, I think LeBron being hurt early, and then they're having a lot of young players to put in and figure out, you know, a way to... It works. I think they tried to showcase Dwayne Wade and showing him respect, but when it all comes down to winning, he'll be there. They put Channing Frye on the bench, and I thought he was a big piece of their team. You know, Tristan Thompson's been hurt. I'm uncomfortable because they don't have any real big. I think that might be a factor down the road, but, you know, LeBron can play anywhere. But, and then the other thing, Michael, you know, when you play every year and you go to the finals, sometimes it takes a little bit out of you. And it takes a little bit, you know, getting used to the grind again. But I wouldn't count them out. That guy, it's unbelievable when you say guy went to seven straight finals. And that's a hard thing to even comprehend. And I think the fact that he's there and there's trust, they're going to be all right.
All right. Every time we talk basketball, we always work our way back to this subject, okay? And let's take Bill Russell out of the conversation, because I think we both agree he's probably the greatest winner in the history of American sports, if you factor in college, the Olympics, and then what he did in the pros.
But absolutely.
Okay, so we'll take him out of the conversation. Now we'll just get down to Michael and LeBron. And Coach, you know this because we've had this conversation a million times on the golf course, and I always say I believe that LeBron is the greatest all-around player of all time in this sense, that he's a more athletic Magic, and he does more things on a nightly basis to help his team win than anybody I've ever seen. And that, but having said that, if I had to pick one guy to play for my life, it would be Michael Jordan. What say you on this debate?
Well, the last statement you made is exactly the way I would describe it. One, I think Michael's a much better defender than LeBron can be or ever will be. I think LeBron is probably as good a passer as they've ever seen. I don't think we've ever seen a physical specimen like him. I think he's got so much better as he's gotten older now that he goes inside and attacks the rim, because I thought early in his career, if he ever was committed to just driving the ball, it would have been all over a lot long ago. But you're comparing two really, really special people. But at the end of the day, if I had to win one game, I'd take Michael. And then the other thing we got to remember, the league, to me, is so watered down compared to what it was when Michael played. And the way the game is being called is so different than it was the way Michael when Michael played. And then the fact that the game is played so differently, that the court is so much more open and there's so much more space to do things, I think Michael would even be more effective. I think if I had Allen today, he'd average 50 a game. And I just think just the way, you know, you can't get near anybody. People space the floor the way they did. The three-point shot has become such a weapon. Transition is such a big part of the game. This half court is something we very rarely see, half court. And it's hard to score when the defenses are set. And I don't think people defend nearly as well as they did in the past.
We're talking to the great Larry Brown on the Mike Lupica podcast. I referenced him before. They played the Knicks the night before we're having this conversation, Coach. What the heck has happened to the L.A. Clippers and our friend Doc Rivers and Mike Woodson there?
Well, he's had injuries, which has hurt. But I don't think that team has a true point guard. I like Beverly. I love his son coming off the bench. They don't have a natural three-man. I just think it's a wreck ready to happen, to be honest with you. And then you don't lose Chris Paul. Chris Paul, you know, when we talk about winners and guys that compete and guys that guard, point guard that thinks pass first and can guard his position night in and night out, you're not going to replace him. And then, you know, they lose Jamal, even though Lou Williams is playing really well. I'm just not crazy about their team. Blake Griffin doesn't make other people better, in my mind. And I think that's really, really important, even though he's a tremendous talent. But I don't like their team. And I think it's going to be a struggle because there's some pretty good teams in the West.
We're talking with the great, and I mean great, Larry Brown on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Larry in a minute. But first, a word from one of my favorite sponsors, Audible. Audible makes getting more books in your life easy. What's not to love about that? They have an absolutely unbeatable selection of audiobooks, all that with fantastic performances. You can easily transform your long commute or your ride with Audible, as I do. And I'm telling you, whether I'm in a train or a car, I do this all the time. Right now, you can start a 30-day trial and your first audiobook is free. You have to go to audible.com/Lupica. Audible has an outstanding collection of exclusive originals, short stories, comedy, all of that. Plus the best of news podcasts like this one and more. Handpicked and continuously refreshed. Be sure to check out audible.com/Lupica to start your 30-day trial and get your first audiobook free. I'm calling them today. I want at least one free. Talking to Larry Brown on the Mike Lubica podcast. Coach, what do you make of the Rockets? Are Paul and James Harden and them, are they going to be built to last across this regular season?
You know, I still worry about them guarding when it really matters, even though, you know, they bring in Tucker and Mabute. They've really done a good job of trying to surround people that allow Harden to play at the level he plays at. But I always look back on that game they played against the Spurs without Tony Parker and without Kawhi Leonard at home, a game that they needed to win to close the series out. And they were down 40 at halftime. And all the Spurs did was go inside out. But at the end of the day, you got Gordon, you got Anderson, you got Ariza, you got Harden, you got Paul, you get guys that can make an outside shot. You got Capella, who's so grossly underrated that you never know. Because D'Antoni allows you to play. Guys want to play for him. And if they're making shots, you're not going to beat them.
What about the Warriors, Coach? Obviously, they're still the whatever the records say right now, and even with whatever the Celtics are doing, they're the class of the league. Have there been anything you have seen from them so far that is like an alarm going off?
No, not really. I think now people are realizing you can't go up and down the court with them, and you can't take 53-point shots and expect to beat them because they got five guys that can start the break after a rebound. But when you got Klay Thompson and Green and Durant and Curry, and then you just fill in with really quality people coming off the bench, it's hard for me to see anybody beating you.
Coach, before we go, we continue our conversation about the Warriors. I told a friend of mine by text that we were doing this podcast, and he's a mutual friend of ours, and he's actually called in with a fashion question for you out of the past. Now, but Coach, we don't usually take call-ins, but I'm going to make an exception for Bob Costas. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, because this is my question, Mike and Larry. We could talk forever about UCLA. We could talk about the Pacers. We could talk about the Nuggets. But my fascination is with the old ABA, where not only were hairstyles out there, but everybody dressed like Superfly. And yet it was the coach, in the case of Larry Brown, who distinguished himself, because I can still, in my mind's eye, see him prowling the Nuggets sideline wearing some sort of full-length denim kind of outfit with suspenders and a paisley shirt underneath it and tan platform shoes. While standing next to him was Doug Moe, who was dressed as usual as if he was a flood victim and had just picked up some clothes at the Salvation Army. That's the primary image I have. Not all the wins, but that image of Larry Brown sticks with me.
Well, it should, because they were coveralls that were specially made for me. And it was part of Doug Moe's old collection that they, you know, retailored to fit me.
Well, you're talking to two guys who understand about having clothes specially made for them. So,
and it was a knick-knack shirt, if I can remember, that shined.
Now, Coach, since we've got Bob here, what are your memories of the team that afforded him his first big play-by-play opportunity, the Spirits of St. Louis?
Well, he won't realize this, but I could have been the coach when he was the announcer, because the Carolina Cougars, owned by Ted Munchak, was sold to the St. Louis Spirits. And every asset on the Carolina Cougars went to St. Louis except for me. Mr. Munchak, you know, told me he wanted me to go wherever I wanted, which started me on this move, because if I'd have stayed with Mr. Munchak, they never would have said I moved anywhere. But they had one of the most unique teams I've ever been around. They probably had one of my favorite players in Marvin Barnes. They had Maurice Lucas, Joe Caldwell, Ed Manning, who I got to coach his son. They had a really Fly Williams, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It was a special team. It was the only guy I ever saw Bobby Jones struggle with defending in Marvin Barnes.
I think Larry would agree, Mike, that if Marvin had stayed on the straight and narrow, which is like saying if the sun had risen in the west and set in the east, but if Marvin had stayed somehow on the straight and narrow, I bet you he would have been among the 50 players standing there in Cleveland 20 years ago on the 50th anniversary of the NBA as one of the 50 greatest players. Boy, there were nights when he was the best player on the floor, even if David Thompson was on the floor, even if Dr. J was on the floor, but Marvin just couldn't get his personal act together.
Hey, well, Bob, Coach has a question for you, Bob. Please, I don't know if Larry knows it. Please tell Coach the story about the private plane and Marvin.
Well, there's two plane stories with Marvin. One, we play the Nets on Long Island at that point, and we lose, and teams didn't travel by charter then. So he misses, predictably, the 7:30 a.m. flight out of LaGuardia. We're going to Virginia to play the Squires. And then he misses the three or four subsequent flights. And God knows what he was doing after the game and into the early morning of the next game. And it finally dawns on him the only way in the world that he can get to Virginia in time is to charter his own plane, which he does. And the plane lands, and he shows up at the game. And Bob McKinnon was the coach. Like Larry said, it could have been him if he had gone lock, stock, and barrel with the Carolina Cougars. Instead, he went to the Nuggets, who were one of the few teams that was doing well, both in terms of how well they did on the court and their record, and also doing well at the gate while the rest of the ABA was floundering. And we're, meanwhile, with the circus called the Spirits of St. Louis. And Bob McKinnon is the coach, and it's 5 minutes for the game. And the door flings open of the visitor's clubhouse, and there he is with his floor-length fur coat, and he parts the coat like he's Clark Kent revealing a Superman suit beneath it. The big smile, he says, "Have no fear, Marvin is here." And McKinnon just kind of throws his hands up, and Marvin goes on to score 41 points and get 19 rebounds in that game. But the other one that people are more familiar with is when we played the Colonels at Freedom Hall, and Louisville's only about a four-hour drive from St. Louis, but St. Louis is in the central time zone, and they hand out the itinerary the next morning, and it says TWA flight 305, depart Louisville, 8 a.m., arrive St. Louis, 7:56, and Marvin beckons toward me, drapes an arm over my shoulder, looks down at me from more than a foot above me, and says, "Bro, do you see this?" And I say, "Yes." And he goes, "Well, I don't know about you, but as for me, I am not getting on any time machine."
Well, I won't one-up you on one, but
go ahead.
I got Mr. Tao to bring Marvin to the Nets. And Mr. Tao was dead set against it, so I said, "Let him come to the Summer League. Let me work with him." So he went to the Summer League. We were staying at the Marriott by the airport. He won the MVP. He was by far the best player in the league. And Mr. Tao said, "Larry, this is a steal." 2 days later, a bill came in from the Marriott Hotel. And Marvin forgot to pay all his incidentals, which was more than my salary.
Because those incidentals might have involved a dozen or more guests, I would think.
Maybe. But he was special, Bob.
Well, he could play.
Ooh, really
good. And,
Bob,
you know, Mike, people forget because of all the success in the NBA and in the college ranks, and the ABA is kind of a fraternity where those of us who were part of it, and I was a part only at the end, but those of us who are part of it, and Larry was as both a player and a coach, it's kind of our own little fraternity because we understand how crazy it was, but at the same time, how great it was. And the team that Larry had with the Nuggets the last couple of years of the ABA and then moving into the NBA, that was a really good team with Ralph Simpson and Mac Calvin and David Thompson, who was just a wonder on the floor. We had some guys in the ABA who could really play. And the first All-Star game after the merger, I think 10 of the 24 players had some kind of ABA connection, and half of the 10 starters in the first final after the merger between the Trailblazers and the Sixers, 10, five of the 10 starters had played in the ABA. There was some good basketball being played, even if some of the crowds were too small to realize.
And Bob, tell Larry, I mean, you know, we've talked about this, obviously, over the last year quite a bit. But your high point with the Spirits was when they beat Dr. J and the Nets in the playoffs that year.
Yeah, they had lost 12 consecutive games during the regular season, either 11 or 12. They didn't have a single win against them during the regular season. They were like 30-50 for the year, some 20 games under 500. And they play the Nets in the first round. They lose the first game, and then somehow they win the next four in a row. And Marvin actually destroyed, I don't want to overstate it because we have such regard for Dr. J, but Marvin clearly outplayed Dr. J in the last couple of games. Freddie Lewis had a tremendous playoff series. And on the last play of Game 5 at the Nassau Coliseum, they gave the ball to Freddie. They cleared it out with like 15 seconds to go, and he just dribbled it down until 3 seconds. And Brian Taylor was guarding him, and Larry knows what a good defensive player Brian Taylor was. And Freddie hit the shot over Brian Taylor. They won the game by 1 point and then went on to play Kentucky in the next round and gave them a pretty good go of it until Kentucky got past them, and then Kentucky beat the Pacers and won the title.
When there was the merger, we weren't allowed to draft to participate in the college draft. We weren't allowed to participate in the dispersal draft because only 4 teams out of the 7 went into the league.
Right.
And then 2 of our teams won their division in the NBA. The Spurs won theirs, mm-hmm. and we won ours. Because the Nets, the Pacers, the Spurs, and Denver were the 4 teams that were taken in. And you're right. People didn't realize how good the quality of play was. And I'll give you one thing that really bugs me, Bob. Maybe you can get this out. They count ABA records in terms of what Dr. J and Ralph Simpson, Daniel Sol, and Bobby Jones did when they count NBA records. They put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
But they will not lump coaching records. So guys like UB and Slick and myself and Al Bianchi, Stan Albeck, they don't count what we did in the ABA in terms of wins and losses.
Which makes no sense.
Well,
no
it would really. Well, it would frustrate David Stern if it all of a sudden showed up that a couple of these ABA guys were way up on the list of wins. So I'm just, that's just a pet peeve of mine, and I probably shouldn't say it.
Bob Costas.
We'll make sure it gets heard somewhere.
Hey, Bob Costas, one of these days we will do an entire podcast and I will just lay out, and you and Larry, because there's 100 more stories from both of you about the ABA. Thank you for calling in today.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon. See you, Larry. Nice talking to you.
Bye. Nice talking to you.
Bye.
No, Coach. I do remember those coveralls. There's a lot more hair, a lot darker hair. Well, we all did in those days. And so once Bob texted me, he said, "Ask him about the coveralls." I said, "Well, maybe you should call in and ask him himself." We're talking to Larry Brown on the Mike Lupica podcast. All right, let's go to the other coast, Coach. And as we continue our NBA, actually, it's a tutorial from you. What do you make Alonzo Ball, Coach, and what this kid faces on a nightly basis, so much of it brought on him by his father?
Well, let me go back. I being a college coach, I went and watched the AAU circuit, and I happened to be in Vegas and watched. I was watching a kid named Andrew Jones who ended up going to Texas, who I loved. And he was playing a game against a team from California, and they had this guy on the sidelines that was screaming and yelling the whole game, which happened to be Ball's dad. And then they had the two brothers playing. The three brothers playing, by the way. One of the brothers was an eighth grader, Mello, you know, and it was like a soccer match. The two young Ball brothers were like strikers. They stayed at half court. They gambled. If they didn't steal it, the other team came down and got a layup. And then the older Ball jumped out of bounds, threw the ball to half court, and one of the two brothers shot a three. And it was the wildest thing I ever saw. So after watching, I said, I got to watch more of this. Maybe this is a way I got to learn how to play. But I never saw any of the three boys show any disrespect to any players, any coach, any referee. And they were remarkable to me, just to watch him and watch the way the dad acted and then watch the way they acted. And this kid's under so much pressure, Michael. You know, now you put in where his brother gets in trouble in China. You look about him being the second pick in the draft, and then some of, you know, a kid like Tatum playing so well and so many of these young kids playing well. I think he's under an amazing amount of pressure, but he is great. He's going to be somebody that everybody's going to want to play with. He's a, you know, him and Simmons are a lot alike because they think pass, they make their teammates around them better. They're willing passers. People sit there and spend time trying to find faults in the way they play. Ball doesn't have to take a shot to make everybody in the court better. The thing that upsets me is I don't think he has the ball enough. I think he should have the ball in his hands all the time, just like it was when Magic played, because he will make everybody around him better. He rebounds the ball. He can get the ball anywhere he wants on the court. His shot's not broken, Michael. It looks different, but, you know, you and I have seen a lot of ugly shots that happen to go in the basket. Reggie didn't have the greatest form. Jamal Wilkes didn't have the greatest form. But you can become a really good shooter in the NBA if you have this willingness to work on it and practice it.
Hey, Bernard, hey, Coach, Bernard King didn't have the greatest form.
Yeah, but he shot it so fast it didn't matter.
Right.
You know, and but Ball doesn't have to take a shot to affect his team in a positive way. He can defend, he's an extra rebounder, and he's one of the truly great passers I've ever seen. I don't think it's fair to compare him to Jason Kidd or any of these other people. He's just Ball, who God gave him this unbelievable ability to find people when they're open. And the reason he's even a better passer, you know, I used to argue with Rick Barry. He used to tell me what a great passer he was, and I said, Rick, you always have two and three guys guarding you. I said, so somebody's always open. I said, somebody like me, nobody's guarding. So if I can get a pass off and make somebody better, I'm a really good passer. And I think that's the thing with Ball. When you're open, you get the ball. He has this rare ability to give you the ball when you're open, and he wants to do that, which will make people want to play with him.
You know, Coach, I don't know the young man. You know, his father drives me crazy, but I am rooting for him to do well. I think he is handling this about as well as you can, and I just hope, well, they will be patient in L.A. I know the coach is going to be patient. I hope Magic's going to be patient, because I agree. The things he can do, you just sort of have to be born being able to do, and the things he can't do, it just seems to me like he can learn those things.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. And to me, Michael, point guards don't need to score the ball. You know, you can surround yourself with people that can do that. But the ability to rebound the ball, it's one less pass to the fast break. Then I look at the dad. The dad's got to be pretty good in a lot of ways, because you don't raise three kids like he did. You know, I know one of them made a mistake. But a lot of us have made mistakes. But you don't have kids like that if you're not doing something right.
Coach, I want to ask you, you know, the one thing about Larry Brown is he has always paid it forward. His disciples are all over coaching and front offices in the NBA. His college coaches are everywhere. When you look at the Pelicans, Coach, it's like they've built a new model there with these two big guys, with Davis and Boogie Cousins. Can they win with Twin Towers again in the NBA?
Oh, absolutely, because they're not your typical, you know, big guys. They both can pass. They both can go out on the floor and make a shot. I don't know if anybody's ever had two better big guys than they have. Now, teams used to have two great big guys, you know, McHale and Parrish, absolutely, and, you know, with Larry. And there's always been, you know, he had Elijah one, and he always had a big power forward. Patrick always had, you know, Oakley with him. You know, David had Terry Cummings with him. you need, in my mind, to get back to playing that way, Michael. That's what I believe.
I was leading up to the question, and then I didn't name the Larry Brown disciple who coaches there, which is Alvin Gentry.
Right. But, you know, I think getting Rondo will help because, you know, Rondo doesn't need to score the ball. He's highly bright. He's really bright. You know, Rue Holiday's another point guard. They got to get a little more around him, but nobody can match both those guys. And then, to be honest with you, Davis is mobile enough to get out on the perimeter and guard guys that are smaller, or to switch, which so many people are doing now, which creates so many problems. The biggest thing is, one, can Cousins control his emotions and allow his ability to shine, because he is so gifted in so many ways. But emotionally, he's just got to grow up a little. And I think playing with Anthony and now having Rondo around him, I think should help. But they're a very, very dangerous team. I don't know if they have enough depth. That would be my main concern.
Coach, before we call it quits for this latest appearance of yours on this podcast, and since we're talking about New Orleans, please tell the story about the one contract that Doug Moe negotiated for his friend Larry Brown.
Well, I was an assistant coach in North Carolina, and Doug was playing in Italy, and Doug got a call about coming from Padua back to the United States and playing the ABA. And I was coaching with Coach Smith. It was my second year. I had just turned down a Connecticut job at 26. And Doug told Sean Morton Downey Jr., the band leader, son, who was a talk show host later on in life.
Right. Morton Downey,
he was the president and GM of the New Orleans Buccaneers, and he said he wanted to sign Doug, and Doug said the only way I would sign is if he'd sign my friend Larry Brown. And he didn't know who the hell I was, and I told Coach I was going to give up coaching and go play in the ABA, and he said, Larry, you'll never get another job. So Doug and I flew down to New Orleans. He sent us two coach tickets. We flew down to New Orleans, and we were supposed to meet at the Barone building and meet with the GM and president of the New Orleans Buccaneers, Sean Morton Downey Jr. Yeah. We went into the Barone building and looked on the directory, and there was no New Orleans Buccaneers. And then I saw his name, and he was the president of some company. I didn't even know what the company was. So Doug and I walked into the office, and I hope this is politically correct, but they had a lot of women with, well, never mind. So
this is not the time. Like, yeah, go, just carry on.
So we were told to wait, and then we were going to meet with Mr. Downey in his office. We walked into his office, and he had the biggest desk I've ever seen. And he put us in two seats that I think they cut the back legs out from under it. So we were looking up like at him like he was some potentate. And then he sat down and he said, Doug, I want you to, you know, play for the New Orleans Buccaneers. And he turned this placard around because it had president of some company. And then when he turned it around, it said New Orleans Buccaneers president. Yeah. And Doug said, well, I want to play for you. What are you going to give me? And he said, what did you make in Italy? And Doug said, I made $10,000 my first year, $11,000 my second. He said, well, I'll give you $20,000 your first year and $22,000 your second. And Doug said, is it going to be guaranteed? He said, what do you mean? He said, well, Larry and I heard the league wasn't going to go over. Is this money guaranteed? And he said, absolutely. And then he said, what are you going to give Harv? And that was me.
What Doug called you and does call you.
Yeah, and I was making $6,000 for Coach Smith and $1,000 for summer camp, which he thought he overpaid me. And he said, well, I'll give Larry $12,500. And Doug said, is it guaranteed? He said, what do you mean? He said, well, Are you guaranteeing him? You can't cut him or anything. Is he? Yeah, he's guaranteed. And then Doug looked around and said, well, what if he starts? And he said, what do you mean, what if he starts? He said, well, he's worth more if he's a starter than 12-5.
Yeah.
So he said, all right, I'll give him a $2,500 bonus if he starts. So now I'm sitting there thinking, shoot, I went from $7,000 a year, and I'm going to make $15,000. How about this? And then Sean Downey looks at me, and he said, hey, Larry, you've been coaching at North Carolina. We're coming in the same year as the Saints. I think it'd be a great idea if you came early and gave some clinics and gave, you know, spread some goodwill around New Orleans. And Doug said, well, what are you going to give him? And he said, well, if you come in June, I'll give you $8,000. And Doug said, wait, that's more than I'm making. So that was my first contract.
Thank you, Doug Rowe. So Doug had negotiated long enough that you ended up, when you went in for 12-5, ended up making more than he was.
Absolutely, Michael. And I ended up, you know, we played in the ABA All-Star game, and I won a car. And I couldn't do anything with the car, and somebody sold it for me. So I made some extra money there. Pretty good year for me.
Coach, what do you miss the most? What do you miss the most about coaching?
I miss getting up early in the morning and going in and seeing the kids and smelling the gym and being with my coaches. I don't miss the games. Not that when the game started, I'm pretty competitive and I love them, but I always worried about the preparation before the game. And I was always a little nervous that maybe I didn't prepare the players for something that they might see. But I loved being on the court, having the opportunity to teach and share what I've been taught. Because you know my background, Michael, and the people that I played for or coached with or coached are pretty darn bright. And I just miss sharing what I've been taught. Now I go to a lot of colleges, and everybody asks me to come and makes me feel like I'm helpful, but I'm the one who's learning. And I want to share what I know before it's too late. So I'm a little bit anxious to get back in some capacity.
Well, anybody ever saw you coach know that nobody, once those games did start, was ever any better than you are. We've been friends for over 40 years. It is a friendship that continues. Have a happy Thanksgiving, Coach. Thank you so much for doing this today.
I appreciate it, Mike. Same to you.
The great Larry Brown on the Mike Lupica podcast. It's clear that as we go through the NBA season, Coach is on top of everything. So we're going to have him on every few months to give us another kind of tutorial like he did today. The numbers continue to grow with this podcast. Please download it. Please subscribe to it. Go to the readers' comments. Leave some comments about the stories that Larry and Bob Costas told today. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.